Yes, I knew Sister White.
We will not fear.
The kingdom is alive. The kingdom's on the move when the poor and the meek and the hungry and the lonely.
I'll never forget it.
Hey, welcome back to Spectrum's Adventist Podcast. Thanks for all the feedback. We've been doing these for a month now, which randomly reminded me of a great novel I read for an English Lit course at Andrews University. It's John Updike's A Month of Sundays. And here's a good thought from it. Suspect each moment, for it is a thief, tiptoeing away with more than it brings. On that note of critical and temporal suspicion, this episode focuses on education, with news updates from Jared Wright, a chat with Walla Walla University student and Spectrum intern, Hallie Anderson, a discussion with an anonymous student leader of Free PUC, and finally, Dr. Ramona Hyman, associate professor of English at Oakwood University, talks with me about Magic Johnson's big donation to the church and the school. Thanks, Jared, for talking with us today, and wanted to hear your thoughts on the state of education in Adventism. What's going on out there?
We're following several fairly big stories that are ongoing stories, one at Pacific Union College, one at La Sierra. There's been stuff happening at Southern recently that's pretty newsworthy, and more broadly, questions of academic qualifications and credentials in the Southern Africa Indian Ocean Division that we've been covering in depth for a while now. So these are some of the stories we've been following in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, any kind of general thoughts on the state of Adventist education before we jump into the specifics?
We've been watching a couple of trends. And in North America, I think there's a lot of concern right now, rightly so, because there's a shrinking pool of Seventh-day Adventist students attending Adventist colleges. Enrollment numbers have been kind of shaky. And this is across the board. It's not restricted to any one institution. And so correspondingly, revenue has been down. And that has meant that a lot of institutions right now are having to take some hard looks at how they allocate resources. And in some cases, they're having to make some cuts. I know, for instance, that at Andrews, they're not replacing some people who have moved on or retired. And so that's one instance where less money means less people to do the work.
Would you say that there's a sense of insecurity about this, or is there a sense of opportunity?
I think, you know, depending on who you talk to, there's both, right? There is definitely a sense that things are not as healthy as a lot of people would like them to be. So that's a cause for concern for a lot of administrators, I'm sure. There's also a sense that there's opportunities for growth, for trying new things, for exploring, in some cases even consolidating. That's been on the table, although we'll watch to see how these kinds of trends play out over the next year or two.
It's interesting to me that we see a lot of student activism on campuses right now.
So the story at PUC goes back to at least 2013, probably before, and it involves questions of academic freedom. There's been a dispute between professor in the psychology department, Aubin Fulton, and PUC president, Heather Knight. That's been playing out in a number of ways, and they've gone back and forth. It looks like a bit of kind of academic brinkmanship almost, where President Knight has threatened to fire Aubin Fulton on a couple of occasions. He successfully pushed back the threat to fire him in 2013. And now it's come up again, reported a week ago on a student demonstration wherein PUC students marched across campus to President Knight's office and requested a town hall meeting. Students were not very pleased. I think there were a lot of nonplussed students at the outcome of that, where they felt like there were a lot of kind of party line platitudes given, but not a lot of in-depth responses to the specific pointed questions that they asked about academic freedom, about the need to balance on the one hand, religious education with the need to be well-rounded and well-versed in a variety of arenas, including atheism, which is one of the key issues. But you asked a minute ago where this might be headed, and I think in terms of the public response, one direct action is a petition on change.org by a group of trustees and to President Heather Knight from alumni. And so far, about 600 people have signed this petition. Key line in it, they say, "We fear that it is an institutional crisis of your own making." This is to Heather Knight, and it's therefore completely unacceptable. So pretty strong language from PUC alumni on that.
Well, let's jump to La Sierra, which is also engaged in its own question about defining the Adventist University.
The issue there is a very different one, although it's also galvanized student and community response. The question on that campus has revolved around La Sierra's implementation of Title IX. Real quickly, Title IX, enforced by the Office for Civil Rights, mandates that students will have access to education without interference in the form of sexual harassment, sexual violence, stalking, rape, these kinds of things. And so there have been cases since La Sierra has implemented its Title IX office within the last year, so this is very recent, there have been cases that have really tested La Sierra's implementation of Title IX. Specifically, several students have come forward alleging anything from sexual harassment to rape against fellow students. And the big problem has been how the university has been perceived to handle these cases. There have been a lot of complaints from students and from alumni that La Sierra has been way too lax about cracking down on sexual harassment. And that's significant because in addition to the problems of perceived kind of protection of sexual harassment or students that harass others, there's the question of losing Title IX funding. Any student that wants to receive government finance has to comply with Title IX mandates. So it's a very sticky situation. There are many layers of complexity. But it's, again, galvanized student response and public demonstrations that have spilled over into the press as well.
Any sense on where this is going?
La Sierra has already implemented some changes as a result. They also had a town hall meeting with the administration. And during that meeting, the administration has said in so many words, "We are going to do better and we are going to make some specific changes." Among those changes, President Wisby has gone on record saying that there will be a full-time Title IX coordinator. The current coordinator is part-time. La Sierra, I think, to their credit, has really been proactive in responding to complaints, although there are still questions about the implementation of Title IX itself, so not going to discount any of that. But when it comes to learning from mistakes that have been made, it sounds like they are looking forward and making some positive strides.
Great. Well, let's jump over to Southern, which is celebrating the end of a very long administrative tenure.
Yeah, Gordon Beetz has been the president there for 19 years. And by all that I can see, he was well regarded by just about everyone. I haven't found any Gordon Beetz detractors. He's very well loved, and his shoes are going to be big ones to fill. Dave Smith is the incoming president. He was formerly the senior pastor of the Collegedale Church there.
It's incredible in this day and age where there's so much controversy, where even someone like Niels Erik Andreasen at Andrews University resigned in a kind of weird board misunderstanding / power play. And here down in the South, where you have a lot of competing questions over power, but also conservative ideology in Adventism. And he was really able to maintain a kind of even hand down there. Of course, he also dyed his hair blue. That was an exciting news story a few years ago.
That's right. We covered that one. And I remember asking some questions to President Beetz at the time about that. And he was a little bit cagey and didn't want to talk about it too much. You know, you understand. That's one of those stories that is kind of fun internally, maybe not so fun for external media. But no, he's really, I think his legacy is going to be one of solid enrollment growth over his tenure. Southern is in a pretty good financial situation. A lot of money has been raised already for a new Beetz Student Center, which is, I think, groundbreaking already happened on April 28th. So student life building with Beat's name on it. You can't ask for a much better legacy than that.
Well, let's jump to the story that you've been doing a fantastic job reporting on, and that is the kind of sad saga of Paul Charles.
It's another education story in the sense that Paul Charles' academic qualifications have been called into question by church members there in South Africa. I've written three stories now kind of detailing the allegations and how the church has responded. First of all, they say that Paul Charles has presented at least two PhDs that are probably, if not outright bogus, then at least from unaccredited and unrecognized institutions. The Freedom Institute is a funny thing, and that's where Paul Charles says he has received a master's degree and a PhD. There's no record of this place anywhere. There's no physical address, there's no website. So that really raises questions about the legitimacy of the institution itself. Or others have said, you know, it's one of these degree mills where you kind of pay money, write a paper or something like that, and get a PhD. In any case, he's passed off as a double PhD, and church members have called a bluff. In response to that, the Southern Africa Indian Ocean Division, where he's currently employed, has told him, all right, enough, you can't tout these degrees as indications of your qualification anymore. And they've also told him, you need to go back and get a legitimate degree from an accredited institution. So it appears that that's what he's doing. He had been called, by the way, to the General Conference to serve as Associate Communication Director there. He is no longer going to take that call, and instead he's going back to school to get a real degree.
Any other things you want to cover before we wrap up here?
I think we want to tell readers that there's a lot going on in education this year, and we're going to be right in the thick of it. And so stay tuned for a lot more education stories. These are the tip of a very large iceberg that is Adventist higher ed in this day and age.
Great. Well, thanks for keeping an eye on that for us.
Yeah. Always good to talk with you about these things.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm talking with Hallie Anderson, who is a student intern for Spectrum. How long have you been working with us?
I started at the beginning of this quarter, so back in April.
And Hallie's a senior communications student at Walla Walla University, and you're also studying journalism and public relations, is that right?
I am, yes. That's my emphasis.
Let me start this way and ask you, what's your kind of general sense of campus news, since that's your beat for Spectrum?
You know, this has been fun for me to report on campus news. It's given me a way to keep up with all of our campuses, and I have friends at several of the other schools. So yeah, I've just been looking to see what everybody's up to and what I can share with anyone reading Spectrum.
Great. So one of the big stories that you've been covering is the Red Bull Challenge happening up
right there.
Tell us what's going on.
That was so much fun for our campus. You know, you hear Red Bull, and I'm sure a lot of people get all alarmed and wonder what in the world Walla Walla is doing now. But yeah, we have three students here. They're three best friends, and they participated in a Red Bull challenge, which took them to Europe to travel. And it wasn't through the school at all, but they did take off time from school to go. And how it worked was they needed points for social media in order to win if they were going to compete.
Uh-huh.
And so here at school, we were liking and sharing everything that we could. It just took over Facebook and Twitter. But it propelled them to first place in America for social points and fifth overall for the competition.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, it was fun for our tiny little school to compete with huge schools and schools from all over the world.
And what were the kind of things that they were doing for this challenge?
Well, they had adventure points, so they had to, one of them was, I think, to sing the national anthem with a stranger, so they did that outside a train station, and we saw a video of that. Another one of the teammates kissed a stranger at the top of the Eiffel Tower, because you could get points for that. So there were just challenges from Red Bull that if you did, you got points. And along the way, I'm sure they made a lot of fun memories.
Are there other stories or general trends that you've noticed as you've been covering campus news?
a lot of them are about student accomplishments, I would say. You know, every time I check, well, what I do is I go to as many websites as I can run by our campuses, and I just look to see what they're posting. Yeah, one of the themes I would definitely say is student accomplishment, or faculty as well. You know, I wrote a little summary about how unions professor, one of them, did some research on bed bugs that was published in some pretty prestigious magazines. So that was fun. And then Oakwood University is always sharing stories about students who are getting scholarships or competing in something. So I would definitely say the theme is accomplishments.
You know, as the schools are kind of wrapping up, depending if they're on the semester or quarter system,
yeah.
What's the general feeling as students are going into the summer?
You know, I feel like summer breaks where you're not doing anything have become a thing of the past.
Yeah.
Everybody I know is, they're getting an internship, they're getting jobs, or they're traveling, they're doing ACA, something. Everyone I know is just incredibly busy this summer, and they have a lot of fun plans.
Thanks a lot for chatting with us, and good luck this summer for you.
Thank you.
Thanks for talking with us today.
Yeah, no problem.
Why don't you just kind of give us a sense of what's happening there from your perspective as a student and also a student leader in government?
So from the perspective of a student, what appears to be happening is there's sort of a breach of academic freedom with the president and faculty members, not just with Auburn Fulton, but it's happened with other departments as well. There's like a very wide variety of students that go to any college, PUC, wherever, that need different things and are at different walks or places in their walk of life or with God or religion or anything, and they all need different things. And the moment you get rid of people who foster a safe place to question, you know, religion or question these different things, then I think it comes out in more negative ways. Then in turn, as students, we're afraid to question our faith or question anything, and then it doesn't enable us as like impactful members of society, I guess. Yeah.
Well, let me jump in and ask you what the feeling is among your peers. You know, what's the kind of climate on campus as you wrestle with these really big issues?
I think there's a lot of tension because there's not a whole lot of transparency with what's going on the other side of administration. Like, even just outside of the Fulton issue, just in general, like, we don't know what goes on. We have no, like, idea of what administration or the board are talking or feeling. There's no like open communication. So I think there's just a lot of tension because when people don't know what's going on, then, you know, you just draw your own conclusions and are able to think or feel your own whatever. And then people disagree. And the moment you get, you know, hundreds of people in the same place, like they're not all going to agree. But that's like also part of the issue and why we need like extremes of like liberals or conservatives or whatever to like, you know, help balance that. And so there's a place for everyone. So I think there's just a lot of disagreement and like confusion, and people are getting really upset with each other if they don't understand.
You were successful. I mean, you held a march, you asked for a meeting was held. And what did you feel about the outcome? Were your questions answered by the president?
Yeah, the town hall was, well, the town hall went precisely how we expected it to go and anticipated it to go. We knew that she wasn't going to answer any of our questions, and she didn't. She kind of said a lot without saying much.
Yeah, that's pretty typical.
Yeah, it's really typical, actually. And
but I think it's important that you got her on record very publicly doing that.
Yeah, and that's kind of our, like, that was our thinking, too. Originally, was we, like, weren't planning to do a town hall or ask for a town hall the whole time. Like, it all started with the demonstration, and we were like, so we're going to go there and ask for what? Like, what are we asking for? And so we're like, when we were talking about the town hall, we thoroughly talked through how, like, we know she's not going to say anything. She's going to get up there and talk in circles. But that was, like, one of our, we were like, that's great. Because the only thing she responds to is PR. That is the only language Heather Knight speaks. To get her on record in a town hall, not even just demonstrating the way she, like, manipulates conversations. It gives room for, like, when she, like, slips up, you know, too.
Yeah.
And she did. She had a lot of slip-ups.
What's next for Free PUC?
Well, we're certainly not waiting around for something else to happen. We're definitely building off of what's happened and continuing to gather information and be as transparent as possible, kind of act as a transparency between the board and the students right now. We'll continue to do so and continue to be as honest as possible with the students about what's happening. I think like the biggest thing that like we can do is just like inform everyone as much as possible about like precisely what is going on. And that's the main intention or goal. The main reason any of us got into this in the beginning is that if she's willing to do this to Fulton, who's, you know, been here over 25 years, tenured professor, like the psychology department is one of like PUC's strongest assets. If she's willing to do that to them, it makes me feel unsafe that she wouldn't do that to any of my professors personally in the art department, or, you know, my other professors in like the English department, or these other people that we're encouraged to build relationships with in a small Adventist community, that like, you know, if she would do it to him, what's to say she wouldn't just, you know, fire someone else? Anyone. It can happen to anyone. And I shouldn't have to feel unsafe like that. I shouldn't have to feel insecure, and the faculty shouldn't either. None of the students should. No one should. It's not right. So I think just Free PUC, where we're going from here, is just continue informing and supporting that specific cause, whatever that entails.
Great. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with Spectrum.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you for joining Spectrum's Adventist podcast.
Thank you.
Let's kind of start at the beginning here and just tell us a little bit about what it was like to be there at the church. Was there a lot of energy in the room? And walk us through the moment of the announcement.
Well, it was, in terms of energy, it was a spirit-filled room. And of course, people from the church members, as well as members from the community, there were a lot of members from the community at that worship service. So the anticipation just was really, really high. And then, of course, you know, Magic Johnson comes with his own joy and his own spirit of love. And you really got an understanding. Of course, we all understand who he is as a basketball player, and also as an African-American male who unfortunately received that sad diagnosis, or maybe I should say it's a health opportunity in terms of his health, in terms of HIV. What I really got to understand, and what I felt in the room, and what we all got to understand, is that Magic Johnson and his wife are Christians. And that, to me, is more important than anything that happened in that room, is that we got an opportunity to see a Christian role model who is, as somebody has coined this term, who's a godpreneur, and he's giving back.
Can you tell us a little bit about what this means to the Oakwood community there? What have people said afterward? What was the talk during Sabbath lunch and around campus?
Well, you know what? People were excited, and people, of course, felt really blessed. As Dr. Bird has said, in terms of his contribution, I'm talking about the financial contribution, he didn't know about it. It wasn't planned. And so the church is trying to build, or is building, a family life center. So this moves that vision that Dr. Bird planted in the community, it moves it forward. So, you know, people are talking about, here's a man who, and a woman in terms of his wife, Cookie, who have been so blessed, and as she said, they understand that they have to give back. So they're just following through on God's call on their lives. And so what it says to us, what it said to people that, you know, that I talk to, that we also have to be committed to following through in terms of the call that God has on our lives. And that it may not always be easy, because I'm sure it wasn't easy when he was diagnosed. However, you understand that Magic Johnson has some praying parents, you know, praying parents. And so that gets us through. So even though we may not always have an easy time, we know we can move through because God is with us. And that is what Magic Johnson and his wife Cookie shared with us. That's what I hear some people talking about.
That's great. Can you talk a little bit about his connection to Oakwood?
Yeah. Now, I was really moved by this because, of course, going into this, I didn't have a full understanding of the significance. His mother has been a Seventh-day Adventist for over 45 years. His mother obviously is a praying woman. She, as he said, okay, to the audience, that his mother didn't give his sisters a choice. They were going to Oakwood University. Hence, that's why he gave that $50,000 scholarship in honor of his mother to Oakwood University. And I was really moved when he said that his mother would go out knocking door to door. And sometimes, of course, you know, people were not listening, but she kept on knocking. So his mother had such a great influence on him. He always had that he was, in essence, he was raised in a Seventh-day Adventist Christian home. That's who we see.
Yeah, his parents have been together for, I think, well over 40 years.
Well over 40 years.
Right? Yeah.
And his father rededicated his life to Christ at that particular service.
Great. Did he have any of his siblings in the audience as well?
They were all in the audience, all of his. And in fact, Pastor Berg introduced all of his siblings and other family members. He introduced them all, and then he pointed out who had graduated from Oakwood University. So, you know, that was really exciting.
Oakwood turns out some really fantastic graduates, and I just, as a faculty member there, any thoughts on how that happens?
I have a lot of thoughts. I have a lot of thoughts, and we could use Dr. Bird as an example, because Dr. Bird, of course, is the man of God responsible for bringing Magic Johnson to Oakwood University Church, i.e. at the university, and to the community. And I had watched that young man grow. Dr. Bird, when I first started teaching umpteen years ago, Dr. Bird was a student at Oakwood, and I have watched him grow from a young, committed student at Oakwood to the pastor of the Oakwood University Church, as well as the director of the Breath of Life Ministries. Oakwood is intentional about, one, students putting God first, and also students understanding that you come to Oakwood, which they have a model that says enter to learn, depart to serve. So you enter Oakwood with the consciousness that you will do well as a servant of the Lord. An institution has to be intentional in that way to get the product that they want. Oakwood is really, really focused on developing that kind of student, really intentional, from the worship experiences that students have and to classroom experience. And so Dr. Bird, of course, is one of many. And of course, as you know, some of the members of Take Six are graduates of Oakwood. But then those people who you don't know, who you don't hear about, you know, if anywhere you go in the world, you are in the midst of young people and old people who understand, one, their purpose is God first, and then two, that you're on this planet to serve in the way God has called you to serve.
Well, thank you for talking with us today.
And thank you.